Good evening, everyone. Today is... what's the date today, guys? I've forgotten.
Yeah, it's the 10th of March.
10th of March, and it's 6 p.m. in the UK, and is it 2 p.m. Eastern London?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, because I didn't know you...
Eastern time. I mean, Central time.
Yeah. Like I said, I said I had no idea the clocks had changed, so I didn't realize I put that into our trailer. So... as you can see, the show is not as advertised because Sarah Mayhew has not turned up yet. We'll stay on air just in case she does at some point. So this is going to be a highly, highly improvised show. So we all do apologize in advance. So I'll just introduce my team anyway. And after a long sabbatical and on time for once, Admiral Casey.
Hey.
And welcoming as always, Big Lundy.
Greetings, everybody.
So, like I said, we have no idea how we're going to stretch this show out. If anybody out there, if you know of a YouTube video that's particularly stupid and you'd like to see us pwn it live on air, please send us a PM and we could do that. Otherwise, Lundy, do you have anything you would wish to speak about first? We always go to you because you know how to talk best. So.
Well, that's quite the compliment.
Well, that's a philosopher's job just to talk, isn't it?
Kinda.
talk
about a bollock, so to speak. Now. So I was actually last night. I found a video that I actually wanted to comment on. The video was by I'm not sure if everybody is aware of the Cobra Jones. He made a new channel called You Had Me at Hayek, and he made the channel because he's an atheist and he didn't want his parents finding out that he's an atheist. And so when they found his channel, he was like, screw that, closing that down, making a new one. So, you know, if you were a fan of Cobra Jones and you didn't know, then You Had Me at Hayek is his, YouTube channel. So he made a video, I believe last night or yesterday at some point, called Gay Marriage. It was response in some ways to Awesome Rants, and also a response to certain arguments that are going on. He made the notion that perhaps the whole issue of gay marriage itself should just be completely abandoned. Not that we shouldn't allow gay people to get married, but that we shouldn't have marriage at all. There should be no marriage. It should just be private contracts made between people that they just have, and then they get, and then they unionize themselves, and then they get together and they do their whole, whatever they consider to be marriage thing. Yeah. That way, no matter who you are, your marriage is still true to you. And there's no government oversight over this is a real marriage and that's a real marriage. It's just, it's all up to you guys.
Maybe you could just go ancient Greek and just, well, pretty much agree that you'll, that if one stays at, if you agree to live with someone and they agree that they can, that you can live with them, well, then you just live with each other. And that's a marriage.
Pretty much. He said that it would cut out a lot of problems. We could also cut out the problem of the people who are, like, totally and utterly against gay marriage.
Oh, someone's echoing.
Sorry, that was me.
All right.
I just got onto Block TV. I had to mute it. So, you know, the people who are totally and utterly against gay marriage will never let it go through. This will work for them because they can just be like, well, my marriage is a real marriage and their marriage isn't a real marriage. And that's fine because it doesn't really matter because there's no government oversight.
Yeah.
And then there's also the people who are married in very, very strange ways, ways that most people culturally just don't understand at all. Like, I married two women and two guys and one transsexual and one transsexual bisexual she-male. I don't quite understand what exactly they are. I personally don't understand all the terms that are involved with all the different things that a person can be. But all of these marriages would be totally recognized insofar as the people who are making the contracts. Now, I like this idea for the most part, but I do have one problem with it. And that's that it pretty much makes polygamy not an issue. Anybody can marry as many people as they want and whoever they want. and just create a contract going, I'm going to marry this many people, and they are going to sign here, and there you go, I am now married to these people. And I've always had a little bit of a problem with polygamy, mainly from not any sort of like moral standpoint, but from a cultural standpoint. And marriage ends up becoming more of a competition than it is a sort of a relationship between people. It becomes this person is rich enough to support this many wives or this many husbands, depending on the gender, and therefore they can just take as many as they want and can support. And then all the, like, really, really good-looking people will immediately try to go for all of that because there's no limit on how many people anybody can marry. So that would in a way, it would sort of be like a little bit of a social Darwinism in a way. Where all the elite marry each other and the poor are pretty much all stuck at the bottom. There's really no middle ground. Middle class will try to raise up and if they don't manage to raise up, then they're going to have to sit, then you're going to have to sink down a little bit. That's pretty much all you're going to be able to get. That's my issue with it, at least.
Okay. And Casey, you got anything to come in with there?
Yeah, I would also say that, well, one thing that I wouldn't like about I don't like about polygamy as well, it's that there's tends to be favoritism.
Yeah.
There could be a competition of favoritism in there, and they will abuse the other wives or husbands or I don't know which, they'll just mainly take care of that one and just keep the other ones that simply kind of like as trophies.
Yeah. I was going to come in a different topic. This is something we discussed just before we went on air. Was last night, Lawrence Krauss, for whatever reason, decided to debate Hamza Sortis of the IERA. I think everyone in here knows who Hamza is, don't you?
I'm pretty sure everyone's aware who Hamza Sortis is.
Yeah, so, like I said, I'm friends with Lawrence Krauss on Facebook, and basically in the lead up to this debate, you know, the usual kind of just setting the terms and that, and Lawrence Krauss, I think he'd heard that at IERA debates, they segregate the audience between men and women. It's completely separate. And he specifically said he wanted the crowd to be mixed. And the IERA, they said, yep, that's no problem. We can do that for you. And so he turned up at the debate yesterday, and lo and behold, women were being asked to sit at the back and men at the front, and three people got thrown out for not obeying the segregation rules, at which point Lawrence Krauss went off his head a little bit. Now, if you give me a second, I'll get the screen region here. There was a little video taken last night of this. And here it is, it's up on the screen. So this was Lawrence Krauss's reaction to the situation. So listen to this.
I'm not getting any sound on my end.
Neither am I.
Okay, either you quit the segregation or I'm out of here. I was promised it wouldn't be segregated. No. No, no, I've already had to chat with your security guard.
No, this is talking about the proper
oath. No segregation or I'm out of here. Okay, good. Good one.
Okay, I think I know. I reset the connections there so you can listen in again. Just let me know you can hear this. Can you hear that?
I can.
Talking about
either
the proper oath.
No segregation or I'm out of here. Okay, good.
And there you have it.
I'm not quite understanding the situation here. Why was he outraged?
Basically, in the lead up to the debate, he had found out that when the IERA, who Hamzas works for, represents, they host a lot of debates with atheists, and a lot of the time the debates are segregated, the audience. But men and women have to sit apart. And in the lead up to this debate, Krauss had spoken to them, and they had agreed that they would not segregate the audience for this one. And basically he arrived, and then lo and behold, the audience was segregated, and the IERA were throwing people out for not obeying the segregation. And so, and then Krauss said, I'm not going to do this debate unless you get rid of the segregation. This is what we agreed to. And as you probably saw on the screen there, he walked out. But basically they caved in eventually, and they agreed to lift the segregation.
That's good.
And basically you go on Twitter today, and all the IRE, you know, all the IERA fans are saying, oh, how can he do? What worldview does he have to base this opinion on, and all that? So, but good on him for making a stand for it. I mean, it's also crazy that there was in Dublin this debate, I think it was, someone can correct me, and they're wanting segregated crowds in a Western country. I could understand maybe if they were in the Middle East holding this debate, you know, that's kind of the laws there, but you're in a Western country, I'm sorry. And also, you agreed to this.
Yeah, I mean, how can you agree to, well, we're not going to segregate the crowd this time. And then when he gets there, like, we're going to do it anyway. Just go ahead and do that. No, don't do that, because that's dishonest and that's going to make your God cry, apparently. So don't fucking do that. That's retarded. That confuses the shit out of me. Like, they agreed they were going to segregate, that they weren't going to segregate the crowd. And they did so anyway. Krauss got outraged, and now they're pissed off that Krauss got outraged. They say, well, what worldview do you have to base on the idea that segregating the crowd is wrong?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't have to do exactly with a worldview. It has to do with your own. We can just go with your worldview. Are you supposed to go ahead and just lie to people and then say you're going to do one thing and then you end up not doing that just because of your own personal morals? No, that's not what it is.
It's also just a pure ethical thing. They agreed to this beforehand. They changed their mind. And also it's just, you're in the 21st century. You're in the West. I mean, how the hell can you, I mean, what do you expect, how do you expect Lawrence Krauss to react to this?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I would expect to be outraged, actually, to be honest.
Yeah, and like, good on him for just standing up to him. I mean, really, really good. Like, I know some debaters, they would have just, oh, well, you know, I'm here now and I can't make a scene. But he made it, but good on him for making the scene.
In the chat, one of our guests, guests are randomly named, but Hardface is asking whether or not we pay attention to the chat. Obviously, I do.
Well, I do as well.
Yeah, we do pay attention to the chat.
I also bear in mind there is a lag between us and what we see in the chat.
What we're talking about right now, the topic that we have, we were supposed to have a guest today, but she ended up not returning a confirmation after we...
Yeah, but we don't know what's happened. You know, could be anything, so...
It could be a great number of things. We're not quite sure what happened. All we know is that she didn't really get back to us when we needed her to. She's not on right now, so we're kind of doing a sort of a disambiguation show, I guess. I don't think that's the right word, but it's a show about random things that are going on within the sort of like skeptic community and things that are topics that are pertinent to that particular community, and we're just kind of discussing that.
Yeah, basically, we do interview guests regularly, and obviously this guest hasn't turned up, so this is basically a highly improvised show, and we do have someone in to speak to, Jay.
Hi, Jay.
Hi.
Hello there.
Hi.
Hello.
Segregated, hi guys. Segregated in Europe.
Yeah, I think it was in Ireland last night.
Oh.
And like I said, the problem was they had agreed before that the audience wasn't going to be segregated. And like I said, he turned up at the debate and he saw not only was it segregated, but they started to throw people out for not obeying the segregation. And that's why he got so angry with everyone.
It doesn't matter if he's agree or not. He cannot has any right to segregate people on both woman and man and separate because that's it's what is what you can call that in Europe. How this is amazing me. How Europe accepts that bullshit. I'm sorry for you these things, this word, but how Europe can accept something like that?
Well,
it's against human rights.
Yeah, well,
and
the thing
Europe
was...
said, I am respect human rights. If you respect human rights, don't let other people...
Well, that's the whole point of the story, that he didn't accept it. Whereas...
Islamic or... Yeah. Islamic and, also, and or not, they are not they are not have any right to to do something against human right in the place like Europe.
Yeah.
Anywhere.
Yeah.
But especially in Europe because Europe is already respect human rights.
Yeah. And also
should respect human rights in real life too.
But also there was another thing I have to add that, you know, it was organized by the IERA and Hamza, so it was a majority Muslim crowd. That's not an excuse, that's just more of kind of the background to this.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
I know,
it
doesn't.
The government respects human rights. The government is Europe. So the government should protect human rights everywhere.
Well, question,
if that place... It's a majority. It's Muslim or not. It doesn't matter.
Oh, yeah. No, that's what I'm saying.
You cannot allow abuse human rights because the majority in some place want that or not. The human right, it is not something for void for majority or not.
There's a good suggestion from a guest in the chat room. That if he had been there, he would have gone to the back of the room with the woman and done the debate from there. That would have been interesting.
Really?
Yeah.
If he wants separated.
Oh, no. He didn't. Like Lawrence Krauss, we've spoken to him and he's definitely not one for any of that.
No, I mean, if he won't do that, he cannot allow it. Government shouldn't allow him to do it in public place.
Yeah.
I mean, in any place.
Yeah.
He wants that, do it in your home. Even if you do it in your home, it is not okay for me. But that's your home.
Yeah.
If everyone in your home accept that, it's the other issue.
Yeah.
So,
let Lundy respond, please.
I'm going to go ahead and play a little bit of devil's advocate here. It's okay if they do it in their home, what you're saying, because...
Just let them respond, please, Jay. I know you...
So it's okay if they do it at home because it's their home. It's their private property. They're able to do that. And by the way, I'm not going to agree with what they did during the debate. It was wrong. They shouldn't have segregated after they said they wouldn't have segregated. That was wrong of them to do. The thing for me, though, is that there is one issue that I have, and that's that generally debates are held on sort of private grounds. So the people who own the ground sort of have the ability to make the rules as to how they're going to set things up. If they go ahead and do it unethically, then that's still something to be outraged about.
Yeah.
But I don't think that it's really the European government's job to regulate private matters. Generally, if there's a private agreement between two people,
yeah,
to do it.
I'm just gonna but yeah, it was a private event, and you know the people bought the tickets and the money went to the organization, so. I mean, we're not excusing them in any way.
It was a private event, which is why if somebody's allowed to do it in their home, then they should be allowed to do it at a private event, an event that's sponsored not by the government in any way. And that's really the only thing that I have to say about that particular issue. Again, I'm not saying that what they did was right, and they did agree beforehand they weren't going to segregate the crowd, and they ended up doing it anyway. That is unethical. But what I'm saying is that the European government themselves really didn't have places to stand and be like, no, you're not allowed to do this, because there really isn't any law against positioning seating in a certain way in Europe. And that's, I think in general, that's probably because if you are having a private meeting of some sort, then you should be able to make the rules as to the seating arrangements of that meeting. And I think that protects civil liberties more than to make a law against any particular seating arrangement.
Yep, you so can. Let me get this. You can talk now, Jay. Are you there, Jay?
So let me get this straight. So this was a debate for from atheists and Muslims. No,
yeah, I'm with you, but I have some.
Yeah, it's no problem. Yeah, yeah, Casey. Well,
now mine is okay. My response for you. You are so concerned about if the government should involve in the personal life of people or not. But in the other, on the other hand, your concern is so away from what those people is abuse human rights or not. I know your opinion about human rights and declaration of human rights and all of that. I know that. But on the ground, in real life, you cannot say, okay, I will accept freedom of everyone. If that's one, it's okay. Even if that's one abuse human rights, in my opinion, I cannot accept any behavior under any circumstances abuse human rights. I don't care if you, the governments involve or not. If you involve to protect human rights, that will be more than welcome from my side. Yeah. If it's involved to abuse human rights, that will be I will be against that government. This is my measure of the issues in this life. You abuse it or not human rights.
Right, but the only issue we have...
Segregation and separated between man and woman. Yeah, go ahead.
The only issue that we have here is that there is a certain level of private matters that the government should not be stepping into. Like, we all agree that the government really shouldn't have a role in saying who is and is not allowed to get married, for instance. That's something that the government really doesn't have a place in. Depending on the context of the marriage, like, is it a government-sponsored marriage? At that point, it is their business, but generally, it's not. It's usually a local private matter when people get married. We probably agree that the government shouldn't be involved in private matters like that. So where is the limit, then, between private matters and the government between private matters the government shouldn't be involved in and private matters that the government should be involved in? Where is the line that we draw?
Okay. What is the line? The line is this. For example, if someone in his family abuse his woman or his child, the government should involve. Regardless, that abuse it's happen in the private or in public. This one point. The other point, if the people want to make that like that debate in the private in our home, and they want to separate woman from man in our home in private debate without a ticket, without any public invent any public from our side. If they want that like they want it, it is their issue. I am not agree with that, but I am not involved in that. Okay? If it's happened something against human rights or hurt anyone in that place, even that place is private, the law should involve. The issue is if there is abuse human rights or not, if there is anyone get hurt or not. I mean hurt, it doesn't matter someone hurt you physical. Hurt, it matter a lot of things of hurt. There is a lot of kind of abuse. There is emotion abuse. There is physical abuse. There is a lot of kind of abuse. This is my line. my line, do what you want if you don't hurt anyone or discrimination against anyone or ask to people hurt or go to violence way against anyone. You don't do three of this, you can do anything in your life. I don't care. Even I am against what is the multi partner relationship, okay?
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I will enforce my opinion to other adults do that by their free will. I will not enforce my opinions. If there are adults and do that with their free will in justice way, I will not say anything if they are do that, okay? But that is never be law. This is something private. But if you want law, the marriage should be from one person to one person. In law, by law, but in the private life and relationship of the others, they are free to do that if there are adults. I mean, adults above 21. This is my concept of adults.
Okay.
Because the brain is complete in 21.
I think we can let someone on the panel respond.
This
there.
Is my line between okay. this and that.
Okay.
Okay.
I can kind of agree with the line that people should be allowed to do what they want so long as they do not harm or I would also add disenfranchise others, mainly because the disenfranchisement of others is something that we find deleterious to a thriving culture. So I would agree with that line, and I would say that segregation in itself as a concept is something that is, by its very definition, disenfranchising. So I would say that regardless of whether or not the people at the event were in a private situation, it's still something that they ought not do to segregate their crowd, even if it is something that their religion teaches them to do. It's not something that can be rationally backed up in any way. Mm-hmm. So I would say that the segregation of a crowd, for instance, with the debate and what they did, is something that disenfranchises others from, say, meeting new people or meeting people that they actually can get a connection with. Sometimes during break periods or Q&A sessions, people will discuss amongst themselves, and you have the men not being able to discuss with the women because they're all the way over here and the men are all the way over here. So we have a limitation of ideals being kind of converse back and forth. So in that way, I would say that a level of disenfranchisement has been going on. And in that way, I would say that it's necessary for the government to step in. And the very same way that, private institutions that decide they're going to ban, for instance, black people from their premises, that is also something that the government should step in saying you're not allowed to do that. Because it's a disenfranchisement of a certain group of people based off of an irrational concept. So that's what I would say.
Yeah. Casey?
I was just going to say, now that I got the situation, well, I think that it should be, that they shouldn't be allowed to do this based on civil rights reasons.
Yeah. Well, we'll probably move on to another topic, and this will be more. I don't think Jay will know too much about this guy who died this week. Dwayne Gish died this week, so we've all heard of the Gish Gallop, and I think, Lundy, you're kind of into debates on that, so give us a rundown of what a Gish Gallop is exactly.
So the Gish Gallop is a certain debate tactic that is very much favored by creationists and many theists whenever they argue with atheists or scientists. The Gish Gallop is a technique, a rhetorical technique, in which the beginning debater, and generally the one who makes a positive assertion, is the one who begins the debate. So it's always, does God exist? Yes, therefore the Christian goes first. Is evolution true? Not evolution true. Is evolution a religion? Yes, and then the fucking person who, the creationist, goes first. That kind of thing. When they end up going first, what they do is they sort of bullet point a lot of points, all of which take a lot more time to debunk than they do to say. You can say way more wrong things within 20 seconds than a person can say, can correct those things in 20 seconds. So that's kind of what the Gish Gallop is. And generally, the Gish Gallop doesn't end there. After that is done, and the next person comes up and does their starting thing, unless they go ahead and try and refute absolutely everything that the first person said, then the next act is that the first person gets up and says, you'll notice that he didn't refute this point, this point, this point, this point, this point, and this point. And then that's the rhetorical trick to try and trick the audience into saying that he's not capable of refuting this point.
I'm just going to say a recent debate which we both watched was William Lane Craig v. Stephen Law, which is very much, we all know William Lane Craig's opening statement, and Stephen Law wanted to concentrate on one topic. And straight away, when William Lane Craig came back up, says, oh, you didn't address all these other things. William Lane Craig, he's perfected it, really, hasn't he? The Gish Gallop.
He really has. The weird thing about the Stephen Law debate is that he left out two of his arguments that he usually uses. He only used three arguments in that debate, which I thought was weird for Craig. He only used the Kalam argument, the objective morality argument, and the Jesus was resurrected argument.
Yeah.
He didn't use the teleological argument, and what's the other one that he likes to use? I don't think it's the ontological argument.
Ontological and the immediate experience of the Holy Spirit.
Generally that's what he uses to back up the
seven, isn't it? Seven usually he fires out.
Generally, from the debates I've seen, he likes to bullet point at least five arguments, all of which take a lot more time to explain why they're wrong, because they seem so intuitively true when he words them the way he does. So you have to take it apart for a long time. Stephen Law, I love that debate, by the way. That debate was done very well. Stephen Law only addressed one issue. He said, I'm going to go ahead and just not address Kalam, because Kalam has been gone over for a long time. I don't find it good. I don't find it sound. I don't find it valid. It's whatever. I don't care about that one. It doesn't matter to me. But Craig himself has defined his God as morally good. So this is the God that he's trying to prove to all of you today. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you evidence against the fact that any God that exists is good. Or at the very least, enough evidence to say that you cannot say whether or not any God that possibly exists is good or bad. And he gave the evidentiary argument of evil, which our argument from the existence of evil, which is essentially that evil exists. And as such, we can say that an evil God exists because an evil God will allow evil. Now, you can give your counter arguments that you usually give as a theist, like, oh, well, he wants to allow free will so that we can experience goodness in a truer sense, or that we can choose goodness. And then Stephen would counter with, well, in that case, I can say that the evil God allows us free will so that we can experience evilness, that we can choose evilness. That you can do the exact same thing. Every single justification you can give for a good God allowing evil, you can give to the same justification in an inverse way to an evil God allowing goodness. So that's kind of, that's what he was trying to propose there. Now, Craig didn't really respond too much to this. Most of what Craig said was that mysterious ways, essentially, going about with when it came to God's actions, which is why evil is allowed, and everyone knows this. It's just that he's mysterious. You can't judge him because you can't know his mind. And Law said, well, yeah, I can say the exact same thing about an evil God. An evil God works in mysterious ways, and that's why the good things exist. I can do the exact same thing. It doesn't really address what I'm saying. I need some sort of evidence, some sort of argument that demonstrates that there is more evidence and it's more rational to say that a good God exists than an evil God, because an evil God is not the God that you believe in, and you believe is an absurd God that can't possibly exist. Therefore, if neither God has more evidence than the other, we have no reason to believe in either. Therefore, atheism is more rational. So Greg tended to ignore most of this argument and simply say, why didn't you refute Kalam? I'm trying to get you to refute Kalam so that I can engage you with Kalam. Well, I'm sorry, but that's not exactly how you defined your God. Need you go with just Kalam? And they established this in the debate, and Craig 100% agreed with this. If you just go from Kalam, you can't get to a good God. You can't. Not just from Kalam. And Craig's like, well, yeah. And so Stephen Law said, well, you're defining your God as good. So if your God is not good, then the God that you're trying to prove exists does not exist. Yeah. It's that simple.
Okay. And this will lead into a nice little promo that in 4 weeks, I think we've got Stephen Law on this very show, which I know you're very excited about because we've had so many scientists and that, just to get a pure philosopher on for you. It was kind of a little treat we threw. It's like a little bone we've thrown your way, Lundy.
Yeah, we don't get too many philosophers on the show. It's generally all science.
And also, well, the reason I went after Stephen Law is I've read a little bit of his books, and he writes these philosophy books that are very easy for the man on the street to grasp. Because, you know, I think you'll admit, Lundy, it's a big problem for philosophy to appeal to a layperson is it's very jargon heavy and very esoteric at times.
I'm going to share a little bit of personal information between a private conversation that Zulu and I have had. Zulu has recently picked up the book Philosophy for Dummies, and he cannot get through that fucking book. Yeah. Like every single chapter, he like messages me and goes, "I don't fucking understand what the hell they're talking about." So I'm always getting a good laugh whenever Zulu like frustratingly tells me, what the hell are they talking about when it comes to the two chickens? I don't get it.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's not the easiest subject. I mean, I'm just doing it because I think it is valuable to know. If I at least get a kind of basic grasp of it, I think it'll help a lot. There was a question, I think this one's for you, Lundy. Why does everything we believe exists seem to come with a paradox to nullify what we think we know?
Generally, because all knowledge is tentative. The scientific methodology is sort of encompassed this particular epistemological approach. And that's that every single hypothesis we make, every single thing that we think is true, has a null hypothesis saying, well, what if it isn't true? What would we see? What would be the case? And everything that we believe that we know has that null hypothesis. And you can't really totally get rid of that null hypothesis, no matter how much evidence you have for whatever it is that you're explaining. For instance, everything we know about evolution could at a minuscule level possibly be not true. Currently, all the evidence supports that it is true. And as a result, it's rational to believe that it's true, but we can't say that we 100% know that evolution, as we look at it, the entirety of evolutionary theory is, as a matter of fact, true. So that's kind of the issue here, is that you can never really 100% get rid of that null hypothesis unless you're willing to state something that you can't possibly know. Only an infallible mind could possibly say that they know things for certainty. And I suppose I'll go ahead and go off on a little tangent here. That kind of gets into the whole presuppositional argument shit that some theists like to put forth. The whole, well, I know things absolutely because God reveals them to me through divine revelation. Well, is your mind still in any way fallible? Yeah, because you're a human. Well, then you can't possibly know that what you're being fed is actually the truth. You have no way of measuring whether or not God's revealed knowledge to you is in fact true, because your mind is just as fallible as mine. You could, as Rene Descartes has said, centuries prior to our current society, you could be being lied to by a deceiving demon, so to speak, a more powerful creature than you that knows a little bit more than you and knows how to trick you. That is what could be happening. You don't know that it's not happening. You would simply believe on faith that it's not happening. Yeah. And as a result, you don't know any more than I do.
Just to say to the room, if you do want to call in, it's add the Skype contact, Trolling with Logic. I say we were supposed to have a guest. There's still no sign of her. So it's just going to be general chit chat. And I think I'll just give a rundown. We have Casey with us, and your speciality is kind of zoology, isn't it, I would say, Casey?
Pretty much.
Lundy, as you can tell, philosophy. And, well, if you've got questions about Islam or anything like that, then Jay's the person for you.
By the way, Jay wants to say something about the regarding the good God, bad God thing that I refer to.
Okay, we'll bring in Jay then.
Go ahead.
And I also want to say something on the chat room. Actually, well, in the chat that's on the blog TV,
yeah.
TC the Unbeliever says in one of his comments that he hates my face. No offense, but I hate that face.
Which you're referring to the troll face.
Yes, I think
on.
It was.
Oh.
So, not your actual face. Your actual face is actually rather cute. Jason.
Yes, it is. We have been told by certain members of Skeptic TV we are quite attractive. So. Anyway,
really?
Jay, yeah, we're not going to tell you which member right now. I might give away something. So, Jay.
Yeah, good God versus bad God. What the evidence to exist of both of them? Someone, if you told me my God is good God, I will ask him, give me your evidence your God is good God. If he say to me, because my God say he is good God, that is not evidence. If you someone really, if I said I have some things and I am not exist even. And I said, okay, I am exist, and someone believe about me. And I said, I asked that one, why you believe about me if I am not exist? He said, because you say that. This is not evidence at all. All the holy books said every God in that holy books is the good God. But in the same book, there is evidence that God is not the good God. So in the same book, so how you can take the your evidence to believe of God from the same sources, and the same sources tell you I am good and I am bad. So tell me where is the logic here? I cannot find.
Well, I think it's more circular logic. I mean, you know, the Soviet Union also said it was free.
Generally, from what I recall, most apologists, regardless of the religion, like to try and determine that their God is a good God, because I guess there is some sort of like problem with discerning that the God that may possibly exist is a bad God, because if it's a bad God, then that's just awful, and we can't have that, so it's got to be a good God, but. Really, how can you differentiate the two, given the current reality? One of the fun things that Stephen Law has done, and I actually saw this during his debate with Hamza Sortsis, is he actually asked, he goes, does anybody have an argument real quick? He went to the audience during his beginning statements. Does anybody have an argument real quick as to why this God is good and not bad, given the fact that there's evil in the world? And one of them said, free will. He gave us free will, and that's why there's evil in the world. And he went, okay, let's just hypothesize that God got rid of free will. There's still earthquakes, right? There's still tsunamis. There's still a bunch of death. There's still a bunch of suffering. There's still all this stuff.
There's also hurricanes.
There's all these tragedies that still happen. Even if we were to completely be mindless automatons, it would still be a bunch of bad stuff that we don't like. And as a result, you can't really even say that free will means anything within reference to saying that God is good.
Beg, how can give you the people say all of this? To me, God, Allah, and say name is what you want. Give us the free will to believe or not. The opposite side, if you choose the not believe, he will put you in hell for eternity. That's not free will. Free will should be without punishment. If you give me. Free will to choice between apple and bananas, and I prefer apple, and you will kill me because I am not taking the bananas. That's not free will. You are not giving to me free will. There is someone in the chat room said Jay sound is like happy ladies. What about my sound and my voice with you guys. The last time someone said her voice is so scary, and now my voice is so happy. Believe me, in reality, I am not happy. I am in this grave under fear, but I am sarcastic girl. So you will hear my loving or my smiling in sarcastic way in many situations. That doesn't reflect me or my situations. It just reflects what I am saying or what I am involved in. As debate or as chatting or as anything else. Believe me, you don't know me. You don't know. I am in grave. You don't know how I am suffering, okay? So we will move my sound. Come back to the subject.
Yeah.
There was another comment made by Huxley. Geological catastrophes are neither good or evil, but a necessity to drive evolution. Without them, there would be no change in environment, and humans wouldn't exist. I got two problems with that. Firstly, we don't require earthquakes and tsunamis in order for an environment to change. That's the first thing. So evolution would still happen if we didn't have those things going on. The other thing that I'd like to say is that we don't require the usage of the terms good and evil in order to say that these catastrophes cause a lot of suffering. That's pretty much all we need to say. That's the maximum we need to say. We don't even need to appeal to the existence of any sort of evil in the world. It would simply be the fact that there is suffering. We don't like suffering. Why would a God do something? Why would a good God do something to us that we don't like? Essentially. So that is, those are the two issues that I have with that particular, line of reasoning.
Okay. I will ask you this question. If there is a good God, and why that good God allowed all awful things happen? Why he doesn't stop that crimes everywhere and disasters, disease, child suffering, abuse? Why, if there is good God, should not be silent and just watch us when the people is suffering?
And also, if there's a good God, why does the zealots have to be so mean?
Yeah.
Bantu Pitts. Does the panel think wearing a hoodie on screen makes one look more edgy? No. I'm not trying to look edgy. It's actually just really fucking cold where I am. And I have the hoodie up because I'm fucking freezing right now.
There was a question I had for Jay. We're going on to another topic now, and it's directly about Islam. Jay, what exactly is the Hadith? I keep hearing it being mentioned. And like, I've kind of briefly spoken to some Muslims and, oh, you can't trust the Hadith, and so others do. So what exactly is...
Your voice is cutting.
I wanted to ask...
Can you repeat your question, please?
Yeah, what exactly is the Hadith in Islam?
You want the position of Hadith in Islam?
No, what is it exactly? Because I keep hearing, like I say...
Hadith?
Yeah, some Muslims, some Muslims accept Hadith and others don't. So what exactly is Hadith?
Okay, Hadith is like the definition of Hadith. I will say the definition in Arabic. I cannot hear you. You are put mute or something, Zala. Hadith, it's what the prophets say or do. Okay? What? You cannot hear?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Hello?
Yeah, we hear you.
I can hear you.
We hear you fine. Yep. So.
Okay.
I just mute my microphone because if I don't, then we get feedback. So.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
So, carry on.
Hadith is what the prophets say it or do.
Right.
Okay?
Yep.
And there is another kind of Hadith. And what the prophet do or what the prophet say when he said this is the direct hadith from the prophet, and the prophet say this and that, and there is indirect hadith when you prophet do some things and the other people say saw that things and describe it. And like, where, how the prophet, or how Muhammad is, he's doing in his life. This is a kind of hadith describe the Muhammad life. Okay?
Yeah.
And the other hadith is the, how Muhammad exactly say something from his mouth, if he is dead.
Okay.
That's like another kind of hadith. And there is a third kind of hadith. There is a third kind of hadith, not a lot of people know it, called al-hadith al-Qudsi.
What is that?
This is called, this is called holy hadith. Not a lot of people know about this.
Yep.
Holy hadith is the, even, no, Muslim, we know if you study hadith,
yep,
or study religions, religions intensive, like Saudi Arabia or other place, they know. But most of other Muslims, they are not know about what called al-hadith al-Qudsi. This is holy hadith. Holy hadith is the difference between the other hadith. It is come from, like they said, it's come from God.
Okay.
Direct to Muhammad. Yeah. Okay?
Yep. I was going to ask.
This is a specific hadith, okay, called holy hadith.
Yep. I was also going to ask, why is it, you know, some Muslims accept hadith and others do not? That's a kind of... Are you there, Jay?
Okay. I am a peer offline. Just give me 1 second to come online again.
Okay, no problem.
I don't know if you hear me clear. Okay.
Yeah, we can hear you. Yep.
We can hear you.
Why some Muslims is accept hadith and some is not?
Yeah, that's a question.
Because the hadith, it is in Muslim culture, it doesn't, Muslim culture, it's a lot of tawaif, it's a lot of parts.
Yeah. Okay.
Like Sunnah, Shia, and others.
Right.
And all of them, except Quran, like the source, the main source, okay?
Okay.
But there are different, right, about hadith, because in Shia, there are not except 100% everything Muhammad said, because there are more to go with Ali.
Okay.
And Ahl al-Bayt. This is Ali and al-Hasan al-Husayn. And with Sunnah, go to what's exactly Muhammad said and what he do. So if some hadith, it is against a lot of hadith against Shia, if the hadith against Shia will not accept. If the hadith against the other part, there is a lot of parts, not only Shia, yeah, the other part will not accept it. If the hadith against Sufi, the Sufi is not accepted.
Okay.
If the hadith against Sunnah, the Sunnah is not accepted. So this is the issue. Everyone is...
so basically...
Just like Charlie...
So it's like Catholics and Protestants.
Chair, what's it? Chair picking?
Yeah.
Everyone. Yeah, something like that. But everyone just take what they want from hadith.
Okay.
Everyone go and take this is hadith is okay with me. I will go with it. This is hadith is not okay with me. I will go with it. like just when you choose, I won't take this short. I don't want this short. It is love, love, love. If you believe of something, you should believe of all of that things, bad and good. You cannot say I believe of this is part is good. I will close my eyes of the other part is bad. If you close your eyes, the other part, bad part, will be there. It not disappear.
Yeah.
Just you are choice, don't see it. This is.
Yeah. Okay, guys, do you have any follow-up questions to that or comments?
I don't have a follow-up question, but I do have a comment to make. If anybody else is a lot more curious as to what Islam was, what the religion itself, what the Quran, what the Surah, what the Hadith say about certain things, there's a lot of apologeticists out there that try to defend that these books don't actually say what in fact they do say. And there's a channel that's in part devoted towards debunking these apologetics, and I'm going to go ahead and link it in the chat for you guys.
Yep, sure.
It's Clean Shores channel. He's very good at debunking these sort of apologetics. Anybody who says that rape is not condoned within Islam, they're wrong. He proves that. Anybody who says that, who tries to justify Muhammad marrying, I forget her name.
A seven-year-old?
The seven-year-old, and they consummated at the age of nine, so to speak.
I can't remember her name. Aisha, they're saying in the chat room.
Aisha was her name, yeah. So people who try to justify that, he goes after them. He's very good at what he does, and he is possibly one of the best, I would say, I'm not sure if it's proper to say he's anti-Islam, but I'm going to go ahead and use that term anyway, and if he doesn't like it, then he can correct me at a later date.
He's
but
a critic, anyway.
He's probably one of the best anti-Islam channels that you'll find.
Well, I think he's an Islam critic, basically. I think that's the best way to
put it. Yeah, that would be a better way to put it. He's one of the best criticizers of Islam itself.
Okay, so anyone follow-up questions or points?
Well, so even in the Muslim community, they will cherry pick the good things in the Quran and just spoon feed whatever sounds good, kind of like what faiths of Christianity will tend to do.
Yeah, I think so. All religions do the same thing. I don't prefer religion one than religion two than religion three. And all of them is blah, blah, blah for me. Just when I am analysis, can you put mute, please?
Casey, you're feeding back.
Yeah, Casey, please. Sorry. Thank you. When I analyze and criticize Islam, that's because I studied. I have huge knowledge on it. I will never say I have knowledge about every single details or every single things in this world about anything. No, I never say that. But I say I have huge knowledge. I am approach maybe I am close to be professional in that. I am criticized that because it in Islam, Christianity, Hindus, Buzi and others, and Jews and all of them abuse humanity in one way and another. But Islam, he put harm and hurt human being directly in this time. Because of that, my offers against what the bad in Islam. I am not against Muslims people. I am against the text. I am against the religion's abuse human rights. I am against the religion said the rape it is okay, and of course I will be against anyone support anything against human rights. I will not play sweet girl. Sorry, I will not play sweet girl to everyone love me. If you abuse human rights, I am against you. Yeah. I don't care if you are Muslim or not. If you are Muslim, if you are Muslim or not, you don't have excuse to say, I am protect my religion, so I am abuse human rights. Sorry, if you someone not agree with me, I am not sweet girl, say yes for everyone. Go ahead, Kelsey.
Well, I was just going to say, so basically you're kind of like, I'm a Hitchens in the...
in standards, where basically he said that he will criticize his religion not based off its people, but based off its texts. Pretty much.
I'll just butt in there and say to everyone, if you do want to call in, add Skype contact Throne Evil Logic, and feel free to ask the panel any questions you want.
I was curious, usually we end the show around 3. Do you want to end it at like 4 or something to get this full 2 hours in, or what?
Yeah, I don't know if anyone's got any other topics to bring up, because we seem to be in good flow right now.
Why not we say what happened to the rest of the TWL members?
I'm not sure what happened to them. So.
Yeah, I don't know what's happened to anyone tonight. But there's a question from Ugly Man, and I think this one's directed to Jay. What's the Islamic view of Christianity in America?
Islamic view of Christianity or any other religions, like other religion view in the other religions. All of them is not except. In Quran, there is obvious and clear words against what's called, can you mute, still for play? Mute.
It's not any of us? No.
No. Okay, now it's okay.
Okay.
And there is clear words in Quran said Nasara and Yahud, they are not accepted. There are kuffar that mean non-believe.
Yeah.
There are kuffar and they should fight them and kill them. This is true. Muslims people admit or not that in your book, in your Quran. If you admit or not, it doesn't matter for me. If you follow it or not, that's the matter for me. If you follow it, you are criminal. If you are not follow it, you are good human being. That's my opinion. But Islam refuse any religion or anything or any thinker about anything not Islam.
Okay.
Like other religion, not except the other religion. This is the problem with all religions. In Islam, the difference between Christianity and Islam, if you Christianity, it is not, if you refuse Christianity, they will not kill you. Islam, if you refuse Islam, they will kill you. And again, I am laughing and smiling here as sarcastic, because some people, when I was talking with David, and some people say, she's love it when you see Islam killing you. Because it is sarcastic people. Recognize between sarcastic and other things.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, like, if sarcasm is the right word. I think when you're laughing about, like, the really weird things that religions do, I tend to look at it as you're laughing at the absurdity of it all.
Yes. Sometimes that like that, but most of times sarcastic from me. It is what the silliest things you are follow it, people. Why you follow? There is a famous statement. I forgot who said. I said good people they will do good things, and bad people they will do bad things. But with religion, good people will do a bad thing. I forget who said. Who said that?
I think, was that Steven Weinberg that said that?
I think so. I don't know. I forget.
I got an atheist quote in the book. I could perhaps all look right. It up.
That's good. Okay. So, Lundy, do you want to come in there? Oh, sorry.
At the end of the day, yeah, Islam is not accepted. It accepted anyone.
Okay.
Yeah, I just looked it up. That is Steven Weinberg's quote. With or without religion, good people can behave well and bad people can do evil, but for good people to do evil, that takes religion. I'm not totally sure that's completely the case. Because again, I'm not sure how we were going to characterize religion here within that context. Are we saying, you know, the popular religions, any sort of belief in God, any sort of belief in the supernatural, any sort of mysticism? Is that what we're considering religion? Because if that's the case, then I would totally disagree with that quote.
Yeah.
No, there is a discussion, there is a definition about religions. Official definitions. If you believe about God, it is religions. If you believe about aliens from Mars, it is not religions. Most of people know these definitions. I don't know if it's the correct definition or not. I will not claim it is the right definition. I don't have right to claim that.
So the reason I say this, and it's been brought up that Stalin did a lot of bad things about religion, as did Mao, and then the question was put up, well, were they good people? Because that is kind of is one of the clarifiers of the quote, in order for a good person to do bad things. For me, this might just be my own personal naivete going on here, but I don't believe that any one person is like intrinsically evil or anything like that. I think everyone does actions they think is best for whatever worldview that they have. If you think that certain people need to be killed in order for the rest of the people in order for the rest of the people to go through life a lot better, then you're going to do that because you see that as good. Now, a lot of us also disagree and we say that's not good. But as a result, I would say, that they are trying to be good people. They're doing it in evil ways and they don't have a religion. That's what I would say. And that's why I would clarify that I don't really particularly agree with that quote.
I believe that is...
A lot of people like to say that Stalin and Mao and pretty much anyone else who ever does anything bad without a religion, they're doing it because of some sort of dogmatic thought, and that kind of counts as a religion. But for me, dogmatic thought is not what solely defines a religion. So simply having that is not what we would call a religion, at least as far as I'm concerned. I'm not sure if you guys would agree with that.
Sorry, I'm kind of chat room monitoring there. So.
Okay, I'm not agree with you totally, but I have this opinion. Maybe it is stranger something in some level. I think if you see the other one as human being, you will never treat the other one less than you treat yourself. But even in dogma or dictatories, there are see the other people less than them. They are not see them equal to them. Hitler or Stalini or Hitler or all these dictatories, there are just see other people beneath of them. So if you see the other human being beneath of you, you will kill that person, and you will rape that person, and you will hurt that person without you feel you are guilty, because you already put that person beneath of you, not equal to you. But if you put that person equal to you as a human being, you will think, I will never hurt that person. This is my opinion between evil and good. The evils, in my opinion, it is someone is discrimination against other human being and treat that human being as less than the way he himself or herself want to treat it. That doesn't mean it's not just justice is not be theirs. If you that's one, it's crime. It is make any crime. You should punish that one. But by law, by a specific process, not revenge, not by your hand. this is my opinion. I don't know if someone agree with me or not, but this is my opinion about evil and God in humanity.
I don't agree with the notion that if you see people as human beings, then you wouldn't do anything bad to them without a God telling you to. Because, you know, if we just go with social Darwinism for a moment, which does not intrinsically mean that you need to believe in a God in order to do it, and you don't have to not believe in a God to do it either. Taking a social Darwinistic approach to it, you can see people as human beings, but you can see them as inferior to human beings. And as a result, you would do things to them that most of us who are a little more rational when we evaluate our fellow man, would not do. And as a result, you know, you can see them as human beings and then still say, I ought to do things to them that are deleterious to their health and well-being, because that's going to produce a much happier, healthier society for the rest of the people who are superior to these particular individuals. Say, for instance, the race realists who exist.
Racial realists.
Well, I'm just going to go with race realists.
Equal. I said equal. Equal. The key word here, equal. To see them equal to you.
Even then,
not just a human being, equal to you.
Even then, I would say that's incorrect. And again, I go to the race realists on this, because they can go ahead and say that Asians, for instance, are smarter than white people, but they still want to do. They actually think that they're superior to white people in some way, and they still want to do things that are bad. Other white people that they look at and they see as enemies in the sort of political realm, they want to do bad things to them. Just about any race. I put that in quotes because I'm one of those who does not believe that race is a valid concept. Any race of people that they look at, they have some sort of like subgroup of, they believe this, therefore I ought to do this to them, and that's a bad thing to them, but it's going to be good for everyone else, and that kind of thing. It's not that they see particular individuals within, for instance, the white race as inferior. It's that they believe something that is deleterious to society, and as such, they need to remove these people from that society in one way or another. So, regardless of whether or not you see them as equal, you still can see that they are an enemy on the front of any sort of ideological war.
I was going to ask you, Lundy, we do have a caller wanting in. It's Sub-Zero Bob, so your decision.
Go for it.
Just talk away while I add them.
I've had a lot of private conversations with Bob. They tend to last really, really long, so this is a good way to eat up the last hour.
We'll see.
Is it going to be like some sort of flame war between you two?
Goodness knows.
We're on fairly friendly basis. He understands I don't believe what he believes, and it's not a vitriolic conversation that we tend to have. So, I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, can I say Alex?
Go for it. Everyone pretty much knows that my name's Alex by now. Yeah. If they don't, now you do.
Okay. So,
your name is Alex.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah.
You're here.
Okay, so, I've been going back and forth. My main problem is that I'm trying to be convinced by atheism, but there's just, for me, problems with that as well. And it's not just the denial of the hypothesis, of the God hypothesis. It's just a lot more than that for me. And I've been trying to work things out to a more constructive manner, so I don't... not blamed for rambling or anything like that. I just wrote recently stuff on for myself. I kind of try to write stuff as they come to me. But a lot of the times when people are saying that, when people say God did it, they're just putting a block or a road stop that stops or further motivation for research and exploration, whereas that's what I want to disagree with. by saying, first, a quote. I know you guys hate quotes, but this is from Albert Einstein. He said, I maintain that the cosmic religious feeling is the strongest and noblest motive for scientific research. And then I start to talk like this. I say, if I call the reason for existence God, it doesn't stop me from searching. It gives me a motive to search even more. I want to know what God is. I want to know what the nature of God is. And at least I have a concept or a direction to go after. If I say that nothing is the origin of the universe, that everything came from nothing, what Lawrence Krauss wrote a book about, then there is no more direction to follow after it. After nothing, there is nothing. So there is no reason to search past nothing. It's an accident, and it's even worse than saying that God did it, because unlike God, nothing doesn't motivate further research. Game over. That's one of the things. Another thing, when atheists tell you that religious people are stupid, mental, crazy, irrational, it's just propaganda. Science is not against religion. Science is not against God. There's plenty of scientists. They're brilliant scientists. Kenneth Miller, nuclear scientists. There was a video with John Stossel, with Michael Shermer, Lawrence Krauss, a nuclear scientist who was a Christian, and an unapologetic dude. I don't know his name. But the main problem is that this is used as a propaganda against people of theistic beliefs. Where do we get the theistic belief from? We get the theistic belief from saying that the basic principle of causation is what we observe, that something is causing everything. And that's all we observed in our existence, is that there is a causer that causes causation. Different religions have different take on what the causer's nature might be, but it's not different faith. It is the same faith in that principle. Applying the laws of physics is nothing to nothing is just a gross underestimation error of nothing. 2 + 2 does not equal 5. And if you're wearing a t-shirt that says that it does, then you're an idiot who doesn't understand the joke of estimation error. We don't find patterns in chaos. Patterns are already there. And finding these patterns promote our existence. Okay. If finding these patterns got us to where we are today, and realizing that the sun is going to be swallowing us up in billions of years, it would be irrelevant which animal we eat. All of the animals will be gone. It is more relevant for intelligent life to get the fuck out of the planet and go to a different solar system.
Bob, please, we've got to let people respond.
We're going to go ahead and let Jay go first because she wants to say something, and then I'll go first. And then I'll go after her.
Okay. You said I won't be atheist, but some things it is block me about that. If you won't be atheist, nothing will block you about for that. This is one point. And after that, you said, Allah for me it is more than Hippocrates and everything's what happened in this life. So why you need your Allah? Do you need your God or Allah to give you comfortable, like your plank, or you need him to show you the way you should live in this life? Are you trust your mind to guide you, or you need super power that exists to show you and to guide you in your life? The third question for you, if you are think it is propaganda against theists when you say this This is propaganda against FTS, because science, it is not against religions. Yes, science is not against religions, but religions is against science.
I'm sorry, you're there.
And this is not...
Jay? Have we lost Jay?
Okay, what?
We're having connection problems. It's really hard to hear you sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. If someone be a doctor or professor, doesn't mean that's one he doesn't need comfort blank. There is a lot of great mind sick for comfort blank, sick for someone or some things, guide them and give them the comfortable in their life, and or some super power to take the responsibility away from their shoulders. So your premises, it's right. Your conclusion is wrong. If you someone be so smart and genius in science, that it doesn't mean he doesn't want comfortable plank. There is a lot of science until now need comfortable plank. So your argument in this point is wrong. You can respond if you want.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and say something that
okay.
I want.
Okay, Lundy, and then we'll let Bob respond.
Lundy, can I just respond first?
Well, I'm pretty much going to touch on the same things that she touched on. So
yes.
You said a lot of stuff, so we need to kind of take these things apart.
Okay, but Lundy first. I want to get a chance to respond.
Yes, you will. Let Lundy speak.
We'll get a chance to respond. I just want to say my piece first real quick. So you began your what you said with the notion that – you brought up something that I had actually told you in private before, which was when someone uses God as an answer for things, it deters any further investigation into the matters of – what God is being used as an explanation for. And I believe you also said in your statement that, it no more does that than saying that God didn't do it also does that. And I disagree with this mainly because if God didn't do it, it's at the very least something that can be possibly investigated. If God did it, then pretty much we're just going to be engaged in speculative thinking. If we're going to say that God did something, what can we really substantially say about how God does any one action? Generally, when someone says that God creates something or that God does something, it's in a way that is synonymous with the term of magic. And as a result, it's something that there is no metric that we have. There's no tool that we have, no epistemological tool that allows us to investigate this matter further. So even if you are discouraged from investigating the matter further when you substitute God for an answer, you're still going to be discouraged in the sense of your inability to determine what more about this answer. So if you go ahead and say God is the answer, it's got to stop there almost by definition, because you can't investigate any properties about this God. So you have that issue. One of the other things that you said, I'm sorry, you said a lot of stuff, so I'm trying to remember. It's totally leaving me. We're going to have to keep your statements to a lot more bite-sized chunks, if you don't mind, so that I can actually remember what everything that you were saying. By the way, we are featured. Yeah. So if you are watching on the front page and you are interested, we are currently having a discussion with Sub-Zero Bob as to the existence of perhaps I believe Bob's particular conception of a god is a panentheistic god, one which we reside within the mind of.
No, not the mind. A god is reality. It's just everything is in God.
Oh, okay. So I'm sorry, because when we first started communicating, you said there was a panentheistic one, and now you're pretty much saying that it's a pantheistic one?
No. Pantheism, it means that everything comprises to be God, And panentheism says that everything is in God.
Right, which is kind of what I said.
Okay, okay. It's a lot of things. I just want to slow down because I understand there is a lot of emotion in, and if I get interrupted, you just stop my thing that I'm doing. But I just want it to be slower because when we go fast, we start to add things that are, look, if you guys said, I just don't believe in God, fine. Okay. I'm no problem with that. But when you start to go after people on YouTube or on any kind of communication that is like this, when we engage in this kind of debates ourselves, we start to go very emotional towards each other in the purpose of winning an argument. And the other sides, in this competitive manner, tends to lose. And you can always lose an argument. You can lose an argument because to each argument, there's always two sides. I'm not saying that I have all the answers, but I'm just as lost as you are. What I'm saying is if I say something, you will always bring points that are going to be contradictory. My things, what I'm saying is hypothesis. It's my view of the world. It doesn't affect my everyday living. Everyday living, I go to school. I go, not to school right now, but I'm just, still, I'm trying to go back to it. You know, I'm trying to revive my time and reorganize myself to do that, to go to work, to go to school, to balance my life, to attend to my wife, to make sure all the bills are paid. All of these things don't affect anything as far as religion or any bad decisions whatsoever. The only time I may be involved in bad decisions is when I contemplate on what does this all mean? Why do I have to exist? Why do we exist?
All right. I think we're going to go ahead and slow down for a moment instead of going off more and more and more so I have more stuff to respond to. Two main points here. One that I already know you're getting into is the whole point of everything. Why live if we're going to die? There should be a purpose if that's going to be the case. If there's not a purpose, we have some issues to sort out. And the first, Lundi,
what you just mentioned should be the answer to Jay when she was talking about the emotion. This is exactly why it gives me the I am very motivated to believe that stuff based on what you just said.
Yeah. I know you have an emotional attachment to the notion of a God for many reasons, mainly that which it gives you a sort of purpose to live and continue living and provide more life to other people or at least support their lives and all that kind of things. I understand there's an emotional connection you have to your belief in a God. The first point you made, though, before we get into that, the first point you made was that we should not go after religious people. It's fine to be an atheist, but to actually attack religious people is going a little bit too far. And for me, I can kind of agree, depending on what kind of attack you're talking about. For me, I don't consider engaging with religious people an attack, and I don't consider trying to restrict religious people from taking over perhaps an institution of governance an attack. I think these are necessary things that all atheists and even religious people should be doing. Religious people should be engaging with atheists because what is the greatest sin of knowledge besides staying away from truth, which is different from your worldview? Totally butchered that quote. Sorry. So I totally butchered that quote, but moving on. And the other thing that I said that we need to focus on keeping religious people from taking a sort of dominance in governance, any sort of governance, is something that I believe is necessary to do, not only for atheists, but for religious people as well, because as soon as one religion takes dominance over governance, all the other religions are then disenfranchised, and so are the atheists. So we have an issue when that happens. So all religions should be with the atheists on that point, and that's what we tend to fight whenever we go after any sort of theistic belief, when we say, hey, you don't get to use your religious beliefs when it comes to the creation of laws and legislation and that kind of thing. And again, I think everyone should be on board with that, both atheists and theists alike. So if either of those are what you meant by attack, then I disagree that we should stop doing that. If you mean by attack that we should stop saying, oh, religious people are all stupid and delusional and retards, and we're all the enlightened ones because we don't believe in a god, ha 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 ha, I can agree with that, because it sort of presents a level of arrogance that I don't think any one person can afford to give themselves when they say, I know the truth, and that there is not a god, and you all are wrong because you're all delusional, it's all in your head, and you're all crazy. That's stupid. And I agree that atheists should not do that. And I discourage any atheist from fucking doing that. Any atheist who's watching this, if you are one of those people who go into the comment sections of YouTube or in your everyday life, you talk to people and go, you're stupid because you're religious. Ha ha ha. If you do that, I don't like you and I wish you would stop. So that's the first point. And the second point you were trying to get into is the emotional attachment you have to towards your belief in the God, because it provides you a sort of, it provides you a sense of purpose, a sense of reason for existing. Why must we live if we're going to die? Right? So if we have to live, then there's a lot involved in the life besides just dying. Sure we live, sure we die. Let's take the God out for a moment and see what that means for us if the God does not exist. We're going to go ahead and do a little hypothesis scenario here. One is a God exists, and what does this mean? One is a God doesn't exist, and what does this mean? I, for one, think that either situation does not change what it is you're going to experience. If the God does exist, then, as you said, your everyday life doesn't really change all that much. You're still going to school. You're still going to work. You're still paying the bills. You're still taking care of your family. You're still taking care of the people that you care about. You're still doing all of this. So as a result, I would say that even if you believe in a God, it's not going to affect your life too much. So if the God doesn't exist, what exactly is going to change? You're still doing all these things. The only question you have is, why am I doing these things? Well, then we have to actually get into the reasons why you do these things. And the first thing, I think, especially when it comes to taking care of your family, is that you care about these people. You have an emotional attachment to these people. And emotional attachments are important to you, which they evidently are, as it is a result of, it is something that you use to justify believing in God, you know. If an emotional attachment is important to you, then you should appreciate the emotional attachment you have to the people that you care about, and that's something that drives your life. You care about certain people, and you want them to live well, and you want to support them. You want to support them, and you want them to live a good life because you care about them. So that is one reason why you would continue living. Say, for instance, though, we have a person who does not have any loved ones. Why would they continue living? A person whose family is all, like, either they're too old and they've passed on, or they didn't have any siblings and they didn't have anything like that, or they were just, like, really distant from their family, so they don't really have any emotional attachments to their family, whatever. That person still has a reason to live, because there's a lot more to life than just the fact that you're going to die. We already have the fact that when you are alive, you experience many things. And that's not just with your interactions with other people. Any little thing can give you a sense of accomplishment, such as playing a video game and beating it. Any little thing can give you a sense of depression, such as making a goal and not being able to achieve it. Every little thing adds up in aggregate to what your end life is going to be, and what that end experience is going to be. Right? So there you go. You have a whole hell of a lot of reasons to live, even without a God. And none of these reasons change, by the way, even if a God exists. So either way, I think that you haven't presented any sort of reason for anybody, even if they're just emotionally attached to this God, to continue believing in this God. Now, and I'm going to make one more point, and then I'm going to go ahead and let you respond. If you're trying to say that perhaps an afterlife would be something to look forward to, if you're going to die, like you just don't want things to end at death, I would totally agree with you that I don't like the fact that we're all going to die relatively young in reference to the rest of the world. I don't like the fact that I'm only going to live, actually, not even as long as most other people because I smoke. So I agree with you that that's not a good thing. But the problem is, any God's existence is not going to change that. And if we were going to add an afterlife, I wouldn't like that either. Because what's worse than a party that you're never allowed to leave from? I don't think that there is one. Sure, it's not great that you're going to have to eventually leave a party. But when you're forced to stay in the party forever, and this is, by the way, in reference to Hitch, he said this before, then that's even worse. Imagine the situation. You're at a party and you realize I have to leave eventually. That kind of bumps you out a little bit because you're having a good time. You're at the party and then one guy taps you on the shoulder and goes, guess what? The host requires that you stay here forever and you have to have a good time. That's even worse because you're eventually going to get bored. You're eventually going to have a hard time enjoying the fact that you're there because you're there forever. You're going to experience everything that everything has to give to you and then some. And it's eventually going to get really, really boring to you. I wouldn't want an eternal life any more than I would want an extremely short life. I want a life that allows me to experience everything and end up being satisfied when I die. That's it. That's the maximum I want. And I think if we're going to get to that point, we're going to need not to rely on a god, because that's not going to help us. Because, again, how can we investigate this god? How is it going to be helpful in reference to that? The thing that we have to focus on is scientific advancement in a sort of transhumanist stance, where we can extend our lives artificially through some sort of means, either by replacing old organs with artificial ones, replacing limbs with artificial ones, perhaps putting our consciousness into some sort of finite amount of time / database that we can put in, and then kind of have our own realities in there, which I think would be pretty cool, to be honest with you. So these are all options that science can possibly give to us, possibly. Not certainly, but possibly. And as such, I think these are the things that you should probably focus on instead of, I need a god in order to provide me purpose, because you really don't.
Okay, Bob. Okay.
Do I have a chance to respond?
Yes, you have the floor.
Sure, go for
okay.
it.
Okay. I want to point out that this is twice the amount that people are thinking than me. And I will go point by point. Are atheists better than theists, because they make secular decisions? Well, when you talk about Biden, our vice president, he made a very good point when he was debating the Republican guy. I already forgot his name. I hope he doesn't run for president. But he said that something along the lines that his religious friends or his church is going to hate him for saying this, but he thinks like so and so. So what this is we're capable of making secular decisions despite of our views of, of everything. Everybody is capable of making secular decisions of just what's right. Another thing, truth is not nothing. This is just basic stuff. Like, truth is not nothing. Just throwing it out there. As far as emotions, telling a child that you when you die is the same that when you, before you were born, which Lawrence Krauss says all the time is what I'm going after. And we'll make a child always ask, then why be born in the first place? It seems very inefficient to go through life not wanting to die the entire time. It would be better if you really love that child, just don't give birth to that child, because they're going to suffer with that idea of dying. And other stuff, the people going at each other, you're stupid, ha, ha, ha. That's what I'm talking about. There's a lot of that going on. Another thing, when atheists form the courtroom no hypothesis thing, and this is their ace card. We're just the no hypothesis. It's unable to prove. Blam, we win. Game over. We're the winners. Our ideology is superior. This is the problem, because when you're bringing that to the court, you get when you're expecting the reasonable doubt, you get crazy outcomes like the Casey Anthony and O.J. Simpsons getting acquitted of something that they obviously did. And a major flaw with that argument, because when you say you can't prove a negative, you end up with the wrong outcome anyway. So the fact that we have an existence and something or someone is responsible for it is the main principle that is the basis of any faith. So when you talk about bring me the evidence, okay, then we have Lawrence Krauss saying, I don't know, and I get paid for coming up with theories about nothing. Then what he's saying is, You bring me the evidence. We work on it. I'm asking you to bring your evidence and do all the work for me. Then I'm telling you I'm getting paid for coming up with nothing theories. Then, because you didn't bring me any evidence that I ask you to do and work on, or any evidence that I find relevant. And you should not only not pay that person, but ask them to give the money back. Because it's just not fair of this whole bring me the evidence thing. Because when you're saying bring me the evidence, you're saying make everything smaller, okay? Bring me the horizon, okay? Make everything that is vast to a small sample so I can put it in a machine and test that. What the greatest scientists in history that I remembered in history, it seems like one of the major prerequisites is being religious or have some kind of faith in the orderliness in the universe. Again, Albert Einstein. Scientists are truly religious men because of their faith in the orderliness of the universe. Okay, somebody wants to come in, I guess. I'm gonna stop.
You touched on a lot of points that I want to get into, but unfortunately we don't have a whole lot of time. And Jay wants to say something about the afterlife, so... unfortunately, Bob, we don't have a lot of time, so regardless of the fact that I'm going to respond to you, we are going to have to let you go, let Jay say what she wants to about the afterlife, and then I'll close this out. It was a pleasure having you on. We're going to have to continue this at a later date.
Okay. Jay?
All right, go ahead, Jay.
Jay?
Are you there, Jay?
Jay.
Yeah. Afterlife. Becky said, I am with you. Yes, I am. Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yeah, we're getting you.
What? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. You said afterlife, it's like a party, and I will get born in the last of the party. My concern about afterlife, if it is exists, from the view of theists, like this. You will go to, if you are good theists, you will go to the heaven, okay? And your beloved, they will go to the hell if they are not good theists in eyes of your God. So, you are in heaven, your beloved in hell, for eternity, both of you, and how you can be so happy I enjoy of your heaven. This one question for them. And the other thing, he said, when I said this is stupid idea and this is stupid thing, I don't say this is stupid people, because some people, they will say good idea and bad idea in the same time. Not in the same times. I mean in the same period of time. When I say atheist, it is stupid idea in their mind, that's my right to say this. Because the ideas about religion, they are stupid. So I am not describe the person, I am describe the idea. The third thing, he said that everyone can act and think in a secular way, even if religion be in the government in high position. No, the reality said no, because the religion involve in your decision. Religion tell you seculars, it's evil. Religion tell you obey your religion. So you cannot be seculars completely and take complete 100% seculars decision if you are your loyalty or your obey to your religions. And I agree with you, Beck. The secular systems will protect theists and atheists and everyone. Thank you. I am so sorry if I take much of more time than
I Lundy, sure. You wanted to come in.
Yeah, I wanted to say a lot of things about what Bob said. Firstly, the whole notion that you shouldn't bring, that if you care about a child, then you shouldn't give birth to them because they're going to suffer in this world knowing that they're going to die. I totally do not buy that philosophy. A lot for the same reasons that I've already stated. There's a lot more to life than simply the fact that you're going to die, and anyone who doesn't recognize that has a very narrow view of what life is. There's a lot of experiences that you have in life, and you're going to interact with people that you like, you're going to interact with people that you don't like, you're going to encounter experiences that you find pleasurable, you're going to encounter experiences you don't find pleasurable. There's no aggregate, there's no metric that you could possibly measure all these experiences by to actually say that you ought not give anyone life because this is going to happen to them. The fact that suffering exists is not necessarily the worst thing in the world, because just because suffering exists doesn't mean that good stuff doesn't also exist. And as a result, I'm of the position that you need to take a little bit of bad with the good if you're going to live in a sort of godless universe, because it's going to be one of the things that you're going to experience. You're going to have a good and you're going to have a bad, and you need to learn to appreciate both of them. And you actually cannot learn to appreciate the good without the bad. So if you don't have any bad in your life, how can you know that you're going to that you have anything good going on in your life? Because you actually can't. You have nothing to measure it against. The only way we can figure out that something is small is if we have something to compare it against. I know that my lighter is smaller than my threat pack because I can compare them. I can look at them and I can say one is smaller than the other. That's how we're able to say that some things are bad, because we can compare the two together and actually say whether or what our feelings are on these two things. So we can say that some things are good and some things are bad, and that we experience both good and bad because both exist. So the whole notion that we shouldn't bring people into existence because they're going to be suffering at some point in their life, I completely disagree with. Pauly Chaser is currently asking, why would you not be able to be happy without suffering? Because you wouldn't be able to know what happiness is, generally. Yes, you would be smiling all fucking day because you would not be able to know what it's like to not smile, because you have no reason to not smile. It's just, I'm always happy because there's nothing bad ever that goes on. And you wouldn't know that you're happy because that's the only emotion that you've ever been able to experience, because nothing is allowing you to experience the opposite. Again, the only way we're able to say that some things are different is because we can compare the two. Without one, we cannot compare it to another in order to make the assessment. That's the problem. So that addresses that thing. I suppose the other thing that I really want to get into here is not just the whole anti-natalist position that blah, life is suffering, don't have people. That's another problem that I have with people who tie their emotions to their epistemological worldview or their or many other things. As a result of emotions by themselves are irrational, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. Not saying that emotions are a bad thing because they're irrational, because they do allow for many good things. For instance, I believe it was Hume who said that when we're talking about morality, emotions are very important, because that's how we're able to, that's what we do as humans, to measure when things are moral and when things are not. Some things disgust us, some things make us happy, and that's how we're able to measure morality, at least on a very simplistic scale. So emotions are not necessarily a bad thing because they're irrational, but that doesn't stop the fact that they are. And if you base an entire worldview around an emotion, then you are subject to that being put, that worldview being constructed on shifting sands, so to speak. So when you construct your worldview on shifting sands, because your emotions can change and your emotions and worldview concerning the world can change because it's all based on an irrational concept to begin with, you have a problem. You have a problem of where exactly you're going to go from here. What is the foundation for what it is that you believe and how you look at the world? If it's all based on emotion, then you have that issue. So that's what I need to say about that.
Okay, I do appreciate a lot of the things you say, because...
Okay, just one thing, Bob. We're running very low on time, so you do have to make this very quick.
So, okay, I'll make it...
2 minutes.
Make it very quick. Okay, very quick. Afterlife is not boring because you're exposed to all the possibilities at the same time. So if you have all the possibilities at the same time, and if that's boring to you, then there's other things you can get into, like reincarnation and all that. But I don't want to get into that much. My concern is why existence and why living. And the biggest thing about the suffering in life is not, oh, there's some suffering, but there's also good. No matter how much good there is in this world, death in its own is the biggest suffering thought that, for me, overpowers everything else. And that's just in a nutshell. Like, I'm afraid to lose what I have, good in accumulated good in life. Just trying to keep it simple, even though I can really go into quantum physics and capacity for choosing from possibilities and how to remain internal with all the possibilities, and striving in physical world is to get to experience all possibilities for human life as a purpose of life in general, as a basic principle of life, is to maximize the possibilities for life and those kind of things. But this is just coming out from my point of view, and you can use the different religions, parts of it and stuff to accommodate to things in nature, in life that are not suiting to you. You can pick and choose, like, different used cars, for example. If somebody's telling, like, the ultimate world would be world of faith. Like, if somebody tells you this used car is good, it's not going to break down on you, and you take their word as currency and you take the car. That is the best way to live, is when everybody trusts each other. And if the car runs down, oh, you had fun with it. You had fun with this car, then move on to another car, whatever other car you presented with, and just ride it. Think of that as different religions inside the dorm room of faith, where people always come out from their dorm rooms and like, oh, hey, check out this thing that I have, or check out that thing. And that's what we're doing here. And this kind of atheism that Lundy is giving is good atheism, because it provokes me to get out my comfort zone and explore different and get more information, like Hume. When he starts talking about Hume, I absorb that. I connect to that, you know, and it exposes me to things that are interesting to me to look into, you know. Some things that they say I'm not going to agree with, but it at least is working on it instead of bashing on it. Oh, that's a stupid idea. Oh, the party is going to be boring with all the possibilities that are available to you. You're going to get bored. I don't think people will get bored if you could do anything that you could, like, you could choose from all the possibilities. That capacity in existence is
how
there.
How do you know? Okay. How do you know?
So
anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I really need to cut in. We're running very low on time, so we're going to have to wrap up at this point.
So, I know, because...
So thanks for the call, Bob. We really are running out of time now.
We have a couple minutes left, so we're going to have to go ahead and drop it there, Bob.
Okay.
What's the cat in the box thing?
What?
There was a cat in the box experiment.
We're running out of time, Bob.
There's cat.
But that's for another time. We are really
physics.
Okay, so we'll
that's
speak.
That's how you know.
Yeah, we'll speak again, Bob, because we, like I said, we're just almost out of time here.
Okay.
All right, cheers. Okay. So we have 4 minutes left. So any thoughts, Lundy? And Jay and Casey.
Well, from what I got from Glee, well, he said that he would be more than happy to point out all the logical fallacies in that conversation. Well, from Sub-Zero Bob.
Lundy, quickly.
Okay.
Pretty much all I have to say is I think a lot of you can discern why it is that I don't believe in the particular philosophy that Bob espouses. I don't find it very convincing. I find it very emotionally driven, and as a result, I don't find it very helpful towards forming a coherent epistemological approach to our world. Again, I agree with him that that we shouldn't have arrogant atheists going around telling all religious people that they're stupid. I agree with that.
But as a result,
you know, I just don't think that his particular philosophy is something that any person should adopt.
Okay. I wish they would be more specific on that thing because, I don't have any problem to say.
Yeah, Jay, you can.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Jay, give your thoughts. Jay?
Okay. I don't have any problem. I don't have any problem to say this is a stupid idea. I don't care if this stupid idea come from theist or not. I'm not put sugar of theist ideas to appear I am democracy and I am a nihilist. No, if their idea is stupid, I will say this is stupid idea. About death, there is a lot of death and of suffering. It's not caused suffering. So his conclusion, all death is caused suffering, is wrong conclusion. Because a lot of death, it is end suffering. I mean in medical issue and the others issue. All what I say, we are not argument for win. We are argument to put the fact on the table. If you accept that fact, it's up to you. If you don't accept, it's up to you. It is not my job to change your mind. It's my job to defend of what I believe from ideas and other things. Thank you, guys. And everyone, thank you.
No problem at all.
Thank you.
So we're just coming up to the end there. Thank you for coming along to this show. I think we managed to make something out of it in the end, didn't we?
Yeah, I think we're fairly positive. Though I know a lot of the people in the chat room were not very pleased with the fact that we let Rock kind of go for like 10 minutes at a time, but you know. Thoughts together. Because to be fair, English is not his native language, so he has a hard time forming what he's trying to say.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It does require a little bit more time to say what he's trying to get across.
Okay. So that was the non-Sarah Mayhew show. I'll be in touch with Sarah Mayhew, and we will try and get her on for another time, because I know probably some of you are in here just to see her. We're back next week, next Sunday, the same time, and our guest is Hemant Mehta, better known as the Friendly Atheist. You know him, Lundy?
I'm well aware with the work of the Friendly Atheist, and I think that's going to be freaking awesome.
Yes, he also wrote the book I Sold My Soul on eBay, and another book that just came out is The Young Atheist's Survival Handbook, I think. It is something along those lines. So, yeah, it'll be awesome. Said go check out his blog because I don't know where he gets all these news stories he reports on. So, we'll be back same time next week. So thank you, everyone, for turning up. Hope you enjoyed. Like I said, we did this one just totally off the top of our head. So good night from everyone, and we'll see you all next week. Thanks.